Going into hospital, even for day surgery, is always a bit of a worry. But when Martin Bromley took his wife Elaine into hospital for a minor sinus operation in the hands of a very experienced surgical team, it never occurred to him how wrong it could go.
We went into the clinic at 7:30 in the morning on the 29th of March 2005. We brought the children with us. We wanted them to be involved. We wanted them to see that although it's a bit scary when mummy goes to hospital, it's something that's good. It's about making mummy better. We spent about an hour there, and at 8:30 we said goodbye to Elaine and we went off to the shops. I got a phone call about 11 o'clock that morning from the ENT surgeon. He said that there'd been problems, that Elaine wasn't waking up properly. He asked me to return.
When Martin returned to the hospital, he received terrible news. His wife was in a coma and had been moved into intensive care.
Elaine was unconscious, and in fact remained unconscious, and despite the best efforts of the team in intensive care over the next few days, it became obvious to me that she was not going to make a recovery. And my request was to switch off the life support, and in fact she died 13 days after the original attempted operation. During that period, I'd had a number of conversations with people in intensive care, but also the ENT surgeon had come to see me on a couple of occasions. He'd explained to me that during the operation, the problems that occurred weren't expected. And not only that, they'd made all the right decisions, but that it just didn't work out. And I accepted that. That's life. And I remember a conversation I had with one of the consultants in intensive care about this, and I said to him, you know, I accept the fact that this has happened, and the only thing I can really hope for now is that when it's investigated, there might be some lessons that can be learned. And he said to me, but we won't investigate it, not unless you sue or complain. And I think for me that's where things became very different, because with my profession as an airline pilot, to me it's normal to investigate when something doesn't work out as it should, not to blame anybody, but for the purpose of learning. And here we had a situation where a patient was healthy, was going to have a procedure that would make her more healthy, but was actually dead. And I couldn't understand as a professional why you wouldn't want to know what happened.
Martin was suspicious that Elaine's death was due to human error, something that, as an airline pilot, he knew could lead to catastrophe. But he didn't realise how common it was in healthcare. We've known for a decade that human error contributes to as many as 40,000 patient deaths in the UK each year, the equivalent of a jumbo jet crashing every week. Aviation has become much safer by acting to minimise human error, but healthcare is lagging behind. We've made a diagnosis, but we haven't come up with a treatment. Tony Giddings, a pilot and former surgeon, is chairman of the Alliance for the Safety of Patients at the Royal College of Surgeons of England. He's seen how human factors can subvert the skills of the surgical team.
When humans are challenged and focusing on a very desperate situation to which they're giving all their attention, they begin to lose sight of the other options. In that situation where your pulse is racing, you know there's a serious emergency, the patient is severely at risk, your normal judgment becomes tunnelled, focused. Now that's a human response we're all familiar with, and sometimes as a surgeon sewing up a difficult hole in a bleeding vessel, the ability to concentrate all your attention on that one task may be jolly useful, but it has a downside, as do all safety measures, and the downside is you become deaf to the whispered comment of the bystander. And you become oblivious to what might be going on at the head of the table or in another part of the theatre.
Errors are not routinely investigated in the NHS and are often hidden or even pass unnoticed. But Martin Bromley insisted on an independent investigation of Elaine's death and discovered just how big a part human factors had played.
She was anaesthetised at 8:35 that morning, just 5 minutes after we'd left. The plan was to use what's called a laryngeal mask, a mask that fits over the face. The first mask, though, wouldn't fit. Elaine's jaw was quite tense, so they administered some more drugs to relax her and then tried to fit the mask again. They tried different sizes of mask, but actually none would fit. And within 2 minutes, it was obvious that things were starting to go wrong. Elaine's oxygenation, in other words, the amount of oxygen in her blood had fallen to 75%.